You know, here on No Nonsense Nutrition, subjects come up. You know, I just, something happens and it makes me think about how to do a show. And what happened for me is on Friday when I was doing my morning constitutional walk, I picked up a can. Now, it's not unusual for me to pick up trash on the side of the road while I'm doing my walk in the morning. Wednesdays especially, because that's the day that the recycle bins are out and I can pick up the trash and throw it right in the recycle bin or the garbage can as I walk by the houses. But on Friday, I picked up this can, and no, it wasn't a beer can. It was a can for an energy drink. An energy drink, actually, I had not seen before. And this particular brand of energy drink, I'm reading the contents as I'm walking down the road. And as I'm reading the contents, I'm coming across ingredients that I don't know. Now, you know, I've been involved in chemistry now for an awful lot of years and feel like I'm fairly knowledgeable. I'm certainly not a chemistry major and not the ultimate expert. But when I'm reading this ingredient list on this can, I was kind of surprised. I knew there would be a ton of sugar in it, and there was 56 grams of sugar. A regular can of soda has about 36 grams of sugar in 12 ounces. But this had over 200 calories just of straight sugar, and sugar wasn't enough. They also threw in some sucralose on top of that, which is Splenda as the brand name. But as I went through the list, you know, and I look at the claims, and the claims are all, you know, more energy for the gym. You know, the nature of the way that the promotion is done on energy drinks is we have energy for sale. So whether it's a drink or an herb or a bar or, you know, some kind of goo, they're supposed to give you a lift. And you know all the names: Power Bar, Red Bull, Amp, Gatorade, Accelerade, Super Energizer. You know, there's more than I can list. They all sound pretty stimulating. The question is, what do they deliver? So, you know, the first thing that we have to look at is the fact that people want more energy. Well, what does that mean, more energy? You know, we should fall asleep within 5 minutes of laying on the pillow. We should sleep through the night. Now, some of you, depending on the age of your bladder, may have to get up once during the night, but I hope you don't have to get up three times, because if you do, then there's something wrong. Either your prostate is swollen, or if you're a female and you don't have a prostate, then you don't just have thimble bladder, as one of my clients referred to herself when I was doing history on her appointment. She said all our family called her thimble bladder. But in fact, we're not designed to be getting up three times a night to go to toilet. But we should wake up refreshed. We should wake up ready to take on the day. And our energy should stay pretty stable all day long. But some of you say, well, I have a good morning, but I have a lousy afternoon. Or I have a lousy morning, and I have a good afternoon. Or I just poop out early. Well, there's all sorts of things that can affect your energy. We can start with something simple like anemia. I don't see anemia a lot in my practice, but pretty much I see it every month. You know, when you get your CBC done, your complete blood count done of your blood values on hopefully your annual blood test, because I think that is a valuable test to do. We measure your red blood cells and your hemoglobin and your hematocrit. And if all three of those numbers are low, you have anemia. And we used to call it iron deficiency anemia. Remember the Geritol commercials? But in fact, there's numerous kinds of anemia. There's B12 anemia and there's folic acid anemia, or properly, I should say, folate anemia. That can make you have low energy. It's got to be pretty low before you notice it, actually, your anemia. A lot of people think, oh, it's my thyroid. It's my thyroid. That's why I have low energy. I need to do something to boost my thyroid. And I had a client just last week. Actually, I had two of them. And the thyroid was tested. And by golly, their thyroid was working just fine. That's tested on a blood test. And the test value is called TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. And thyroid-stimulating hormone isn't actually made by your thyroid. It's actually made by your pituitary gland. It's your pituitary gland telling your thyroid to go to work. And so if your thyroid isn't making enough thyroid, your TSH number goes up because it's having to yell at your thyroid in order to get it to work. But then you can go further in the examination of the thyroid and measure something called free T3 and free T4 and find out really how good the thyroid is producing. But in both of these instances, these clients, their thyroid didn't have anything to do with it. And then we look at the adrenal glands. I love the adrenal glands. I just think it's really amazing that something the size of a walnut that weighs the amount of a grape, this little triangle thumbprint of an organ that sits on top of your kidneys. You probably heard kidneys called renals before, so add renals on top of renals. When we look at these adrenal glands, they make dozens of hormones. I mean, this little tiny factory, this little factory that's not any bigger than your thumbnail, and yet it makes dozens of different hormones. I mean, we don't have any factories that can do that, and yet we have one in our body. And so those adrenals have an inside and an outside, just like the walnut has a shell and a meat. So the adrenals have an outside and an inside, the medulla that makes hormones like DHEA and the cortex that makes things like cortisone, your body's natural painkillers. Well, we mentioned DHEA. Let's talk about DHEA. It's a hormone that comes from the adrenal gland. It's actually also made in the brain, and it leads to the production of the male and female sex hormones. DHEA can turn into testosterone, and testosterone can turn into estrogen. And these levels in the body begin to decrease about age 30. When I do testing, which is done with saliva samples, the range is usually pretty big, like 30 points to 300. And you go, whoa, that's a really big range, because the levels decrease as we age. So I don't expect to see DHEA at 250 in a 60-year-old woman, nor do I expect to see levels that are 85 in a 25-year-old guy. Levels decrease more quickly in women. We might say that women have more stress, but that really wouldn't be fair. But low DHEA levels can lead to hormonal disorders of all sorts. And so DHEA started being used over-the-counter as a hormone because, you know, there are only a few hormones that you can get over-the-counter. Most of them are available only by prescription. DHEA has been studied pretty extensively, and they called it a youth hormone. And so a whole lot of people that were on the, quote, anti-aging, close quote, bandwagon started sucking down big amounts of DHEA, like 100 milligram doses. I remember a guy that came to me years ago, and his prostate was the size of a basketball, and that's a joke, of course, because he'd been taking so much DHEA, it had turned into so much testosterone that it actually swole his prostate gland. Not a good thing. But DHEA is one of the things that can become deficient as we age. It's one of the things that's made in the adrenal glands. And it definitely has something to do with your energy. But what has even more to do with your energy that's made in the adrenal gland is adrenaline. Everybody's heard of adrenaline. Well, the other name for it is epinephrine. Epinephrine and norepinephrine have a lot to do with focus and memory and concentration. And so when I read these energy drinks, they all use those words, you know, focus and energy. But we have to realize that there's some dangers here. There's some dangers here in terms of the caffeine. And there's some dangers here just in terms of all of the other ingredients. So I'm walking down the road and I'm reading this can that's got sugar in it. And I'm looking for where the energy is coming from. And they throw in a little bit of arginine, and they throw in a little bit of this and a little bit of that. into the formula things that historically have had something to do with energy. But I'm not seeing any real direct stimulant showing up with any of these ingredients that I'm looking at. But some of these things are precursors. Like if I talk about the amino acid tyrosine, tyrosine is very much a precursor for the manufacture of adrenaline. And so for some people that have adrenal fatigue, amino acids like tyrosine really do make a difference. Well, people come in all the time and they say, oh, I have adrenal exhaustion. My adrenals are shot. Well, if your adrenals are shot, you wouldn't be sitting across the desk from me because you wouldn't be able to function. So adrenal exhaustion is a pretty rare situation. It's actually called Addison's disease. Our former president, John F. Kennedy, had Addison's disease. But adrenal fatigue, that's another story. Well, Western medicine has sort of poo-pooed the idea that adrenal fatigue can happen, but I sure see it in my practice, and I sure see it being able to be measured. And we measure it with a four-time cortisol test. You take a saliva sample in the morning when you get up, and one at noon, and one at 5 o'clock, and one at 10 o'clock at night, and you graph the cortisol. Because cortisol is the sidekick to adrenaline. They ride together. If you squirt out adrenaline, cortisol follows. If you squirt out cortisol, adrenaline follows. So we see both of these hormones being manufactured and having a good bit to do with energy. And you've heard them called the fight or flight hormones. Actually, there's a third F there. No, not the F you'd guess. It's the third F there is fight, flight, or freeze. Because some people do exactly that when they're startled. So if you get scared, you know, you come around the corner and the boogeyman is there. Somebody nearly bashes your car on 41 during tourist season. Oh, nobody's ever had that happen to them. You drop the casserole dish on the floor, a la George Carlin. And your adrenals go, squirt, squirt. And they squirt this cascade of adrenaline and cortisol, and it makes your heart race. And sometimes you feel it thumping. Increases your blood pressure. Makes you more able to fight or flight. Either to fight the boogeyman as you come around the corner or to run like the wind to get away. And so these hormones are very important to us because they can save our life. I always give the example in clinic of the fact that, you know, if I'm a woman walking across the bush veldt in Africa with a baby on my hip and a baby walking behind me, and all of a sudden I come upon a lion, my adrenaline squirts and I'm able to run like the wind and get up into the rocks and the safety. And so that's exactly what it's for. You know, what are the things that cortisol does? It's a catabolic hormone. It actually breaks down muscle. We would wish it would break down fat, but that doesn't happen. It breaks down muscle to liberate nutrients so that you can run, to give you a burst of glucose. We have a stored version of glucose called glycogen, sort of dehydrated glucose that sits in your liver and the large muscles of your body, and that cortisol burst liberates that glycogen and turns it back into glucose and puts it into your bloodstream. Or if you don't have enough of it, then it takes a bite out of your muscle so that you can run. The problem today, as I've spoken about in other shows, is that we've got a boogeyman around every corner. It may be the next customer you have to deal with if you're in retail. It may be the next customer you have to deal with if you're in a service job. It may be the demand of your child or the demand of the traffic or the demand of the news. Because we can be sitting passively on the sofa and hear something difficult to listen to from the television and create an adrenal cascade. And so what happens is the adrenals end up doing in 50 years what they were designed to do in 80 or 90, and they get pooped out. And that's adrenal fatigue. Adrenal fatigue is something we can repair. It takes a couple years, but we can repair it. Adrenal exhaustion? I have to tell you, I don't know that adrenal exhaustion can be fixed. You can improve it, but I don't see people with adrenal exhaustion getting well because they push themselves too hard. They got too many places to go and too many things to do and too many phone calls to return. It's just too much. I saw a billboard on the church on Main Street as I was driving to the station this morning, and it said, "Life is a marathon, not a sprint." Well, these people are trying to make life a sprint all the time. So when suddenly they stay up too late and they get up too early and they're pooped, and so they go to the drive-in window at the coffee place and they get a vat of coffee. Actually, it'd be a lot better if they got a vat of latte, because at least the latte has got milk in it, which is protein, a gram an ounce. So if you're going to drink a vat of coffee, you'd be better off to drink a vat of latte to get some energy. You got to get some energy. Got to get going. And so a lot of these people turn around and move over to this category of energy drinks. And so when we look at the caffeine that is present in there, everybody knows caffeine is a stimulant. And there are some of you that are incredibly sensitive to caffeine. And so you know darn good and well that you could drink a cup of coffee at noon and you'd still be wired at 10 o'clock at night. You don't process caffeine well. We have two detox pathways in our liver called phase one and phase two detox. And phase one detox is where caffeine gets taken care of. And some people just don't detoxify or break down caffeine very effectively. My father was the opposite. He was a phase one hero. He could drink a cup of coffee at 5 minutes to 11, go to bed at 11 o'clock and be asleep at 11:05. So some people can just metabolize caffeine more effectively than other people can. But the situation that happens with these energy drinks is it's not just the caffeine. Yeah, the caffeine is a big piece of what's going on. You know, and we could make a list of how many milligrams of caffeine were in everything. But, you know, what's true is it varies tremendously. And when Consumer Reports went out and bought a whole bunch of bottles of these energy drinks, they found out that there was a huge big difference in the amount of caffeine that was in them, even for the ones that were on the label. The consumer group bought three samples each of 27 different energy drinks. The highest amount was 242 milligrams, which is kind of like a bucket full of coffee, in one of the 5-hour energy extra strength. Even the decaf energy drink still had caffeine in it. But the thing that was remarkable about it was that 20% of them had more caffeine than was claimed on the label. And nearly half of them, 11 of them, didn't even list the amount of caffeine. One drink actually had 70% less of what was on the label. I remember when Consumer Reports did a study a couple of years ago, and they went to all sorts of coffee shops, from the gas station coffee shop to the convenience store coffee shop to the drive-through coffee shop, and bought decaf coffee and found there was anywhere from 6 to 50 milligrams of caffeine in decaf. Decaf is not caffeine-free. It's caffeine-low. And so when they took these 27 drinks and they measured how much caffeine was in them, they went up into the hundreds of milligrams. And to give you a comparison, a regular cup of coffee, and I'm going to have to say an 8-ounce cup of coffee, because it's very rare that I see somebody drink the 5-ounce cup of coffee that used to be the standard when I was growing up. Mostly it's a mug now. And the majority of them are going to have around 100 milligrams of caffeine in them. That would be pretty common, to have a cup of coffee, 8-ounce mug of coffee with 100 milligrams of caffeine. And yet, when we looked at some of these high-performance energy drinks, You know, it didn't matter whether it was Monster or NOS or Rockstar or Celsius or Full Throttle. They all had over 200 milligrams. More than a pint of that high-test coffee. Well, for people that are caffeine sensitive, that can sure make heart palpitations. But, you know, a lot of those people just stay away from caffeine because they know better. It doesn't make them feel good. You know, we know that caffeine is supposedly safe up to 400 milligrams in a day. There's 200 milligrams if you're a pregnant woman. And about 50 milligrams for a child, depending on their weight. But the problem is, we don't know who has the electrical default in the heart. We don't know who has that propensity for not having good electrical wiring in their heart. We know it's an awful lot of people because an awful lot of people end up with atrial fibrillation and tachycardia and other kinds of variations in their heart rate. You know, when I read the story of the 19-year-old that died as a result of taking no-dose tablets, what a heartache. What a heartache for the parents. You know, right there in the bottle it said, safe as coffee. Well, of course, this kid took a handful of these no-dose, and it wasn't safe as coffee. What happens when you take a pill of caffeine is that hits you all at once. When you drink the equivalent amount of caffeine in a beverage, whether it's a soda or an energy drink or a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, it doesn't get into your system all at once. You know, if you have any issues with high blood pressure or heart problems, please don't ever mess around with caffeine pills. And remember, Excedrin contains caffeine. So we've heard of deaths by energy drinks. You know, the Australian kid that died about 5 years ago drank 7 or 8 cans of energy drink and then suffered fatal cardiac arrest. Well, I can't understand why anybody would be able to drink 7 or 8 cans of an energy drink. But the FDA is currently investigating more than a dozen deaths that have happened over the last 4 years as a result of energy drinks. So when we look at the nature of caffeine, caffeine's got a lot of good benefits to it. In fact, University of South Florida, Johnny Bird Center for Alzheimer's Research, has come forward with some really good information about how caffeine helps the brain work better. So I'm not anti-caffeine by any stretch of the imagination, but I am certainly anti-energy drinks, primarily because of the other ingredients that they contain. And no, it's not just the sugar. You could get 56 grams of sugar lots of ways. I mean, I stopped and had a gelato on the way home from the concert last night. And by the way, it was a fabulous concert. But 56 grams of sugar? You're going, Eve, well, how much is that? That's 14 spoons full of sugar in one energy drink. But now I'm reading through this can, and this can is using all the good energy words about how it's going to make you, you know, have energy for the gym. And in the list of ingredients was sodium hexametaphosphate. Sodium hexametaphosphate. Just rolls off the lips, doesn't it? Maybe you can use that as a name for one of your children, sodium hexametaphosphate. And I'm looking at that name, and I'm looking at that name, and I'm going, okay, so it's a phosphate. I got that part down. And it's clearly a food additive, and SHMP is something that I've seen before on labels, but I have to tell you, I had no freaking clue what sodium hexametaphosphate was. And then I looked it up. And they said it was used as a sequestrant and used as a deflocculant. Excuse me? A deflocculant? That's a word we use every day. It's used as a deflocculant in the making of a particular kind of clay that's used in the manufacture of various kinds of ceramics. It keeps the clay particles in suspension. That's what a deflocculant is. It's used in water softening and detergents. It's used as a food additive. Oh, a food additive. Good, to keep something in solution. So with sodium hexametaphosphate, I did a little bit of further research and went up on the material safety data sheet. Now, if you put it in food, you have to have an MSDS, a material safety data sheet. All the time when I have clients come in that have been exposed to pesticides, I say call your pesticide company, whether they're treating your house or your lawn, and ask for the MSDS on the products that have been used in your house and on your lawn, because they are required by federal law to supply you with an MSDS on request in a reasonable period of time. So I go look at the MSDS for sodium hexametaphosphate, because it's obviously keeping something in solution inside this drink. And sure enough, I read all the stuff about the chemical product and the chemical identification and who makes it and, you know, who's done the study. And you come right down into the hazard identification. And it tells you that it's hazardous if you get it in your eye. Well, duh. You know, there's a whole lot of things that are hazardous if you get them in your eye. And it's slightly hazardous if you get it on your skin. You know, it's a sensitizer and an irritant. But when I got to the part that said potential chronic health effects, carcinogenic effects, meaning does it help create cancers, it said no information available. And the mutagenic effects, does it cause a developing fetus to mutate? Well, we don't have anything available. Is there developmental toxicity? Well, that's not available. But it does say repeated or prolonged exposure is not known to aggravate a medical condition. We don't really know what it does, but it doesn't really aggravate you. Okay, well, I don't know about you, but I never woke up one morning and said, gee, I've got a shortage of sodium metahexaphosphate and I ought to get out there and drink one of these energy drinks. So I'm walking down the road and I keep reading the can. And then I see glycerol ester of rosin. Oh, remember grandma being out in the backyard harvesting the glycerol ester of rosin, where we combine glycerol and some kind of an ester gum. Again, to keep oils suspended, to keep them evenly mixed. Because you know the old adage that oil and water don't mix. Well, you've got to use some sort of an agent to get them to mix together. Well, when I read about the glycerol ester of rosin, it said small traces of wood are naturally occurring in glycerol ester of rosin, which is used as an alternative to bromated vegetable oil in citrus-flavored soft drinks. Oh, good. I can either get bromated vegetable oil, which we've seen in everything from Mountain Dew to Green Gatorade. And when you hear the word bromated, you hear the word bromine, and bromine is one of the halogens, and it competes with iodine. You know it as iodine. So chlorine, bromine, iodine, fluorine, chloride, bromide, fluoride, and iodide, they're all in the same chemical family. And so when you take in bromine, when you take in chlorine, you compete with your own iodine. Yeah, maybe one of the reasons that we're seeing so much hypothyroidism in this country is because people are getting so blinking much bromine in their diet and so much chlorine exposure and so much fluoride exposure that they're competing with the iodine, and so we can't make our own thyroid hormones. So we're going to use glycerol ester of rosin with its small traces. There are only small traces of wood that are found in there. Many food and beverage companies use glycerol ester of rosin because it provides a pleasing and authentic fruit flavor in water-based beverages. Now, I know that that's what you long for, a pleasing and authentic fruit flavor, as opposed to doing something like, well, eating a fruit. What a concept. citrus oils are really concentrated. And they have to be balanced out in order to make something palatable. So this is one of the ways that you can do that. And then they go on to say, although glycerol ester of rosin has been deemed safe for humans, it's wise to cut back on its consumption because it's predominantly found in soft drinks and sweets that have empty calories. There are no health risks directly related to glycerol ester of rosin as an ingredient. And federal regulations prevent no more than 100 parts of wood rosin per million, and only a trace amount is found in sodas. Boy, it's just making me lip my lips thinking, oh, I've got some stumps of some longleaf pine trees in my yard. We could make a batch of glycerol ester of rosin. We could even form a thickening agent called ester gum. And then we can make a beverage-grade substance out of it by adding a catalytic acid like sulfuric acid to break it down. Oh, boy, glycerol ester of rosin and sodium hexametaphosphate. Doesn't it just make your mouth water waiting to get this energy drink full of sugar, full of caffeine, full of wood bits, full of stuff that we don't even know what it does to the human body? I wonder if there are any dangers here. What's a fundamental danger of an energy drink? It's the fact that you think you can get energy out of a can. That's the fundamental danger of an energy drink. It's the fact that you're not recognizing. I'm not recognizing. The world isn't recognizing that energy comes from other things. So then you go, well, but there's electrolytes in here. People talk about electrolytes like they're some sort of a magic ingredient. You know, electrolytes are sodium and chloride, like you get out of a salt shaker. Potassium and calcium and magnesium, that's what electrolytes are. They're the very reason that I want somebody to take a high-quality multivitamin, multimineral every day. An electrolyte is a substance that ionizes when it's dissolved, meaning it loses one of its electrons so that it can bind to other things. You place a salt in a solvent, such as water, and the individual components disassociate, they break apart, and they create a thing happens called solvation. Not salvation, but solvation. We have a solvent in there. You put table salt in water, and it becomes salty water. It disassociates, and you taste that salty water. So electrolytes occur in food. We get calcium from food. We get potassium from every plant that grows out of the ground. We get magnesium when we have that handful of almonds. We don't need to be drinking a drink to get electrolytes. Now, I'd be happy if you continue to keep your contents availabilities high by taking a good quality multivitamin, multimineral. But if you think that you're going to get energy out of a can, you need to think again. The first thing your adrenals want is a good night's sleep. Go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time. Go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time. Your adrenals love that. Because the irony of adrenal fatigue is that if you sleep in, you're going to feel better. But when you sleep in, if you have adrenal fatigue, you actually feel worse. Your adrenals get quieter, quieter, quieter. You're a whole lot better off to get up at the same time and then take a nap in the afternoon if it's your weekend off. Your adrenals want protein. They want protein because the amino acids that are available in the protein are what the adrenals use to make these neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters and hormones are proteins. And so in order to make a protein, you have to have the building blocks of the protein. And so when you have an egg for breakfast, when you have the Greek yogurt on your fruit for breakfast, When you have a salmon burger, a black bean burger, when you have that protein for breakfast, your body is going to take those aminos, deliver them to your adrenals so your adrenals can make these neurotransmitters of alertness. Anytime somebody has fatigue upon arising, they need protein within an hour of getting up. If you just eat a bagel, if you have a piece of toast, if you have a bowl of sugar bombs, you know, if you eat a donut, you have a sweet roll, you're going to be in worse trouble by 10 o'clock. So protein for breakfast is definitely the thing that we want to do when we've got adrenal fatigue. And see, when you're jump-starting your engine, whether you're using an energy drink or you're using a cup of coffee to jump-start your engines, you can't fool Mother Nature. You know darn good and well that what's going to happen is that you're going to turn around and have a spike and have a sink that's going to happen a fairly short period of time later. But you know the dangers of the energy drinks, and you know they're selling $5 billion worth of this stuff in the United States every year now. So, you know, if something's packed with sugar, you can pretty well bet that it's going to be sold. But the thing that's interesting to me is that the nutrients that actually are beneficial to the adrenal, things like ginseng, are in such incredibly low supply. And, you know, a lot of these drinks are $2, $3, $4 a dose. You know, I can give you some of the best nutrients in the world. Things like vitamin B5 and vitamin B6, pantothenic acid, pyridine hydrochloride. When we look at the fact that the adrenal glands need a whole lot of B5 and B6, yeah, all the Bs have something to do with energy. B1, B2, and B3, riboflavin, niacin, thiamine, they go in the cell and they help the carbohydrates turn into energy. But B5 and B6, they help your adrenal glands make something called coenzyme A, which contributes to your energy. That's going to do a heck of a lot more than grabbing an energy drink. And so now the energy drinks have gotten so popular that now we're going to put alcohol with it. We're going to turn around and have Red Bull with vodka. Talk about impairing your judgment. Forget about the heart palpitations. What happens is when you mix energy drinks together with alcohol, you actually spend more time drinking. You increase the blood alcohol level as compared to drinking alcohol alone. And the caffeine in the energy drinks masks the depressant effects of the alcohol, making it more likely that the drinker is a wide awake drunk instead of a passed out drunk, which of course would make them stop drinking. This makes alcohol poisoning a lot more likely. There was a remarkable study that was published last year in the Journal of Adolescent Health when we saw that there were fewer symptoms from excess alcohol consumption, like headaches and dry mouth and lack of coordination, because the energy drinks were stimulating at the same time the alcohol was depressing. They didn't lower your blood alcohol level. They actually increased it. We change performance on tests that measure cognitive function. How well do you think? So who are the people that are most likely to drink energy drinks and alcohol? Their youth. And remember, youth becomes relevant with every passing year. But we actually decrease cognitive function. Oh, that's a great combination. So see what you get from a morning walk when you pick up a can on the side of the road, or actually in somebody's yard. There's some real dangers here. Can you revive the adrenal? Yeah, you can revive the adrenal. But you got to start out with treating the abnormal sleep patterns. You have to start out with getting protein in first thing in the morning. And you have to look at the fact that there are lots of scientific ways that have been proven to boost energy. You know, taking a walk at your lunchtime. We have a client in the clinic that worked for Sarasota County in that multi-story building downtown, and she only had 30 minutes for lunch. And we put her on a program, and she went to a protein drink for lunch. And what she did is she walked up and down those four flights of stairs three times during her lunch break. Her productivity went up. her whole health at the work site improved. She had a brighter brain and a slimmer, tighter body, I might add, just by changing that 30-minute habit. Instead of trying to shove a salad into her face, she drank her protein drink and walked up and down the stairs. So a little workout in the midday can make a big difference in your energy. You know, taking a power nap, if you happen to work for Google, you could go into the nap room, take a 10 to 20-minute nap, because anybody who's got adrenal fatigue should never take a nap longer than 30 minutes. You take a nap longer than 30 minutes, you downset the adrenals again, you feel even more pooped. Go outside. Just walk outside. Just walk out into the parking lot. You'll feel more alive. How's that for an energy boost? You know, eat every 4 to 5.5 hours. Not snacking your way through the day. Sitting down and eating a full and proper lunch. People say to me all the time, I don't have time to do that. You don't have time not to do that. Stay away from these high sugar drinks. It doesn't matter whether it's soda pop or energy drink. The high sugary drinks, even if they're caffeine free, can cause a crash as well. Have a laugh. I adore the women that I work with. There's a good bit of laughter in our clinic, even though we deal with some people that are pretty sick. But a laugh always births energy levels. You know, when you've got mirth, you reduce stress, you increase natural killer cell activity, meaning your immune system is working better. It's really an antidote for stress. You know, sometimes there's silly stuff on YouTube that actually is worth watching because it gives you a giggle. Stretch. Get up and move. Get away from your desk. Just a few desk stretches could be enough. You know, we know that a little bit of yoga will fight depression and anxiety because it's got an effect on the autonomic nervous system. It helps make GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, but you knew that. GABA helps us to feel calm. When we look at stretching, you don't have to do yoga poses. You don't have to stare at your navel and chant ancient Sanskrit words. You just got to move. Open your curtains. Get some more sunlight in. Think fast. It may not sound easy if your eyelids are drooping, but making the brain work a little quicker can sometimes help the body. Like trying to read at a quick pace. You'll feel more energized. Some people work at home. I had 3 clients this week that work out of their house. Go get up and take a cold shower. Talk about the polar bear swim. 3-minute cold shower can counteract a lot of effects of fatigue. First off, it turns the thyroid on and tells the thyroid to make more warming hormones. Take a few deep breaths. Not because you're going to scream at the stupid driver, but just take a few deep breaths. Gets the blood pumping. Boosts your energy all day long. Drink a glass of water. You know, if you're just 2% dehydrated, your muscles are 10% weaker. So you feel limp. It isn't just about alertness energy. It's about your muscles being able to work. Get social. People who are less social are less happy and they don't sleep as well. Get out of the house. Go do something. Join a club. Go to the movie. Hit a concert. We have so many things to do here in Sarasota that there's not enough days in the week to do all the stuff that's interesting to do. Like go out to Siesta Key Beach on Monday and watch Meet the Sky and learn about Jupiter and Mars and Saturn. Smell a lemon. You know, aromatherapy has shown us that there are stimulating scents, and one of those stimulating scents is lemon oil, mandarin orange oil. Those are things that are stimulating. Just do something interesting. When you get off work today, take a ride to the beach. Just look at the surf for a couple of minutes. Look at the birds. roots for a couple of minutes. You know, it's just amazing how much better you're going to feel when you just do something different. You don't just have to go grab an energy bomb.